North Korean officials say that U.S. claims about the upcoming summit are misleading. I guess the problem is that all the countries involved are trying to give the blame to their supreme leader. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, if I have an excuse to play The Clash on The Trump Report, you know I'm going to use it. Yes, I would hope that, or maybe I would expect people around the White House to be singing, Rudy Can't Fail. At least, that's what they hope. Welcome to The Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt with Brooks Elise. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad to be back.
And yeah. At the other end of the desk, the one, the only, Scott Moore.
Yeah, good to be here.
Chelsea Galicia, on assignment. Tamara Brown, also on assignment, but not on assignment. All of us, we're able to be here.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things that we can start talking about, but when we have a great song, when we have a great theme, and we have a great thumbnail that goes with it, thanks to Marissa, that we can show off, this seems like the sort of thing that could actually go viral. So I'm going to tweet it out, and we'll see. For those watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm talking about. If not, you'll have to go to YouTube, look for the thumbnail, or follow the Trump Report at Trump Report ABTV, and I will send it out a little later, and then you can see. And Marissa was saying that she's very happy to have a couple weeks now where she hasn't had to put Trump's face on something. So I feel like Rudy is going to be around for a little while. So maybe next week we'll have the special message to you, Rudy. Well, that's true. He'll be in the news for a while. Right. I don't know how long he's going to keep his job. There's a lot of things to really say about Rudy. I would say that the most interesting was his appearance with Sean Hannity, where he said, Rudy mentioned that President Trump had paid off a number of women, and you could tell Sean knew that, but didn't expect somebody to actually say it, because his reaction was, oh, like, I don't think you're supposed to say that. Scott, how would you evaluate Rudy Giuliani's recent media tour? His first day on the job, basically.
Yeah,
was that
exactly.
Day.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's an A+.
Right?
Like, great job.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. I just loved how Trump was like, yeah, he'll get his facts straight, which I meant like,
yeah, he just
facts.
Started. He just started his first day.
Facts and air quotes.
But
here.
I mean, we got some useful information out of those appearances.
Yeah.
And I think that the specific comment that Hannity reacted to was Rudy saying, was like, well, yeah, you know, but you know, they paid that back, you know, like where all the money came from. And then you have questions about like what kind of, you know, millionaire pays $130,000
in installments.
Yeah. So you got to do
that. In a retainer agreement.
You got to put it like on the installment plan, like the Christmas club at
exactly.
Walmart, you know, where it's like,
easy payments of 1995.
Yeah, it's like I'll be able to buy it later.
Like buying a Nordic truck, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, not that anybody in the White House could use a Nordic truck. Brooke, you hear all this stuff, and you know, every time we do the show, it's always like, I'm often stunned by what we have to talk about. I'm never surprised anymore, but sometimes it's just like, all right, that was a bit of a drive-by shooting, that really got us. Give us your thoughts of, first of all, just the choice of bringing Rudy Giuliani on board.
Yeah, I was flabbergasted because I think they were talking about something completely separate. And then goes straight into Stormy Daniels and goes straight into saying, oh, and yes, he did pay Stormy Daniels and he did know about the payment to Stormy Daniels. And I'm sure Sean Hannity is like thinking, am I in another world right now? But then Sean chimes in and says, oh, you mean how, you know, he funneled that money, the choice of
it's
word
like,
funnel,
dig,
through
keep
the
digging,
law, through law firm.
Digging.
But it's not, and then, you know, Rudy Giuliani backtracks and says, well, it's not a campaign finance violation. And, you know, I'm in law school, you guys know this. And he even says, Rudy Giuliani even says, you know, well, I'm just talking about the lawful part, like how the law pertains and not the facts. And one thing you learn in law school, it's like law school 101. It's called issue spotting. You look at the facts and then you apply the law. The facts are very important to understand how, as a lawyer, and Giuliani's a lawyer, that you are to apply the law, but he's completely disregarding the facts because he doesn't know the facts yet, right, because it's only his first day, of course.
Well, I mean that.
And, so it was just all. Well, hilarious.
And I was going to say this administration in general seems to have a problem with facts to begin with.
Well,
so
there's always that too.
Well, you know, when you deal in the currency of information, I think that it's very important to keep that information close to the vest when you know there's no reason
that's
for it to
the
be
other
out there.
Thing, yeah.
And I don't. I mean, look. There's the theory that, you know, they wanted it to get out there and this was the best way to do it, just have it seem like he blurted it out. But I don't know. When you think of some of the things that Trump has tweeted, you're just like, I think isn't that the way to get it out? That he never actually says it, but then again, then it shows up. So I don't think anybody's clever enough to have, you know, brought Rudy Giuliani on board as like this Manchurian candidate.
I don't think so either. Yeah. No. But I do think that it's very possible that there are a lot of women that have been paid off. So he kind of wants to just throw it out there so it seems less ridiculous later on when all of that's discovered. And he kind of talked about this retainer agreement. I mean, we all know what a retainer truly is, and it's not what they're describing. And it sounds more to me like a slush fund. He said for these harassment claims or these harassment cases or something of that nature. So I think he's foreshadowing what we're really going to see soon enough when we get into Cohen's.
Which we've heard about, too, is that there might have been this kind of separate slush fund established for potentially multiple.
He even said it was up to like $470,000that was paid to Michael Cohen. We know 130 of it has gone to Stormy Daniels. So we're wondering what the rest was for because he said Michael Cohen did no work for him.
Yeah, I know, and I feel like at this point Stormy Daniels is like, I definitely should have gotten more money for all this.
You know,
like, $130,000.
Not much.
But I think it's Trump couldn't afford 150, so it was like, you know, it's like, look, 130.
Yeah,
that's my final, a negotiated number.
Yes, because it's such a weird number.
Right.
It's not like 125. You're like, all right, you know, maybe that's like, you know, specific money earmarked for, you know, to buy a vacation property or something. Anyway, I don't know.
$129,900.
It's like Price is Right bidding. $1, Donald. In any case, I think that the whole thing is it's fascinating to watch. I mean, for anybody that likes, you know, any kind of train wreck television, just watching sort of the wheels come off the Trump train. But don't worry, for our friend Star Jared, resident in the chat, who often talks about the Trump train, the wheels aren't really coming off. They just got a little loose, and you know, they went off the track, and then they immediately got them back on.
I thought the wheels were gone a long time.
I don't know. I was
going to
say, I don't know if they've ever been back on track.
Well,
they've been trying.
As we often talk about, you know, a lot of times people will say, like, why do you care about all this stuff? It's like, this is the stuff that, first of all, some of it's kind of fun, you know, in a way.
It's interesting.
To talk about it. It's interesting. But it's not that you paid off a porn star because you cheated on your wife. You know, I mean, believe it or not, I think there may have been presidents who cheated on their wife before, even before they were president. I'm not going to name any names, but there might have been a few. But it's not anything new. But they weren't on record potentially lying about it. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think he probably, as in President Trump, is able to keep his hands clean because anybody who lied about it is him. Is not him. They lied on his behalf. Now, he's definitely said misleading things to the press, but, you know, I mean, I think he feels like his job is to lie to the press, so he doesn't have to worry about it.
Well, he's not under oath.
So he's under oath.
Yeah, he's not under oath.
And look, there's much more valid issues where it's important to not tell the truth to the press because, you know, maybe you're 2 days away from killing Osama bin Laden. So you have to, you know, not put that out there. Obviously, completely different sorts of information, but I'm saying lying to the press, I don't know. It's fine with me because they're probably going to get wrong what you said anyway. So that doesn't bother me. But what's the problem with Watergate? Well, it's not that it happened, it's that you lied about it. And that's why people are always drawing the comparison. Everything I've seen, I feel like there are people who could go to jail for some of this stuff. But it's not him. I don't know. What do you think, Scott? I know you've always got the impeachment clock counting down.
Well, I mean, it really depends on what happens because it does depend how much he knew and what he did and how the payment ends up being classified. Right. Was it an elections issue? So there's still a long ways to go with that, not to even mention what else is going to happen with all the Russia stuff and what other things we're going to uncover because it seems like there's something new every day of some kind of scandal that he or his administration is involved with. So, you know, it's just like pick a day and see what happens.
Right.
But I think there's a lot more that we're going to get about this and about what Michael Cohen has done for him and as his fixer and what other things, like you said, with the additional payment that was given to him, what that was used for. And so I think it's really just kind of scratching the surface. And that's why it's taking so long with the Russian investigation, too, because there's so many layers, so many things there that it's a lot to go through. So we're just kind of scratching the surface on a lot of the stuff.
Mm-hmm. So not this calendar year. You think the impeachment clock is going to be in 2019?
Yeah, I've always thought that too. Because again, it's going to be midterms, exactly, and that's always been sort
of the thought. If it's kind of good that Chelsea's not here, not in general, but because of the next point that I want to make. So if Mike Pence becomes president and he serves less than 2 years in this term, then he's able to run for two terms. So he could be president for 10 years.
Technically, yes.
I don't foresee that.
Technically, yes, but yes.
I mean, you know, he's an old white guy. That tends to be what Americans vote for. So, you know.
Technically, yes, yeah. Although.
There's the one time they didn't. But all the other times, the old white guy usually is someone who wins the presidency.
Yeah. I think we might. Maybe I'm extremely hopeful, but I think we might have some type of resolve by this summer. I know that Mueller has filed some paperwork to show that things are moving along. Maybe not complete resolve. And as you guys may or may not know, there's always been this question of whether or not a sitting president can be indicted. And there's been something written on it that says that technically no, but Mueller can decide to give his findings to Rosenstein, and then Rosenstein can decide whether or not he wants to give those findings to the House, and then the House decides on whether or not there's impeachment.
So you have
to not be
a sitting president. So
correct.
And of course, I mean, a lot of these things were drawn up when, you know, presidents would routinely, you know, go out on duels, you know, and that's how they would settle their beef. You know, they wouldn't go on Hannity. Exactly. They would take a musket to Weehawken. But I know that he wasn't president.
So it's possible that at midterms the House could flip and impeachment could happen. But also remember that we have what's going on in Southern District of New York, which is not under Mueller's jurisdiction, which could potentially mean something else for Trump. I don't know. We know what it means for Cohen at this point, and it's state, not looking good.
And state crimes are different.
And state crimes are
compared
different.
Compared to federal, we're talking federal with being indicted and impeachment and everything. And of course, if it did go to the House, then you still need 67 senators in the Senate to vote in favor of impeachment to have him removed from office. So that's a very high number.
That's a very high number.
But not to say if there were things that were happening and you had Republicans there and you were able to get 13 or 14 Republicans, depending on how the makeup is in the Senate, then it's definitely feasible, especially in certain areas. But it's definitely a tall order. What would be more likely is that he would end up resigning because of pressure, which is what happened with Richard Nixon more than anything. If it feels like that he's not going to be able to govern, but, you know, he'll probably try to stand as long
as
possible. But
then there are so many, you were talking about the many layers of the Russian investigation. I call them buckets. There's like the financial bucket where we have the problems with Cohen and we have problems with his entanglements with Russia. And then we have the Russia election bucket where we have the problems with Cambridge Analytica and the problems with Russia using Facebook, for example. And then we have this other bucket with Manafort and Flynn where they have their own lies after lie about their work with Ukraine and Russia as well. And so I am hopeful. That sounds horrible. I do truly believe that something's going to come out of one of those buckets and that they're all married together and that that might hopefully be enough for the House and the Senate to say this is wrong.
Yeah. Right. I think it all deserves a closer investigation. Right. And, of course, there are also allegations that, you know, that Russian bucket was filled with something that was brought into a hotel room, but, you know, haven't seen that
bucket
yet.
Too, there's that bucket. That's a whole other
That's a different bucket. But there's a bucket within the bucket. So I don't know. There's so much. And I don't know. I feel like I'm not going that far out on a limb, and you can feel bad for the American people. But I feel bad for Melania that she is out there. And, you know, you can't be any, you know, look, a lot of, especially political couples of any kind of power and wealth, a lot of times they have arrangements and things like that. And usually the arrangement is just either don't let me find out about it or don't embarrass me.
And, or she knew what she was marrying into.
Well, she very well knew what she was marrying into, but you feel like there's some kind of understanding. Is like the expectation was not, I'm going to be humiliated and have this talked about constantly. And the porn star is going to be in the cold open on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And everybody...
I don't think there was a presidency clause in there when they got married. No. She could have foreseen.
Right. And that's what I was going to say is, like, I don't think in her wildest dreams she ever thought, even if he was thinking about being president, he would ever win in a million years. Well, I mean, it was never on her.
I think a lot of people feel he never thought he was going to be president.
No, and he didn't either.
Especially before he ran, he never thought... I mean, some of the decisions that he made, I don't think he would have necessarily made.
Right.
So I don't know. I you see her, you know, she goes out there and, you know, she's still at events and she's speaking and you're just
and
like
her campaign.
You're just like, oh. I feel really bad for her. And
I can see that. I do too.
And
sometimes
somebody who's not here this week usually doesn't feel bad for her.
Sometimes.
But you know, like whatever she signed up for,
the choice to be with that thing.
But like I'm saying, whatever she signed up for, it wasn't this. This wasn't what she signed up for. Right. It was this. And you know,
thing had to make her own pamphlet. She couldn't.
Well, she couldn't. Well, you know, and look, that's like, I mean, it's not like she sat there and took a pamphlet and took the words from it. It's like that. So this is not the first time that this has happened. And there are people on, you know, look, the First Lady has a whole staff. There's an office there. I could, when I was a White House intern, I might have ended up there, but I didn't. I ended up at the Vice President's office. This was Al Gore, in case anybody thought I was.
Oh, I love Al Gore.
Thought anybody thought I went out hunting with Dick Cheney. But
can see that.
Which would have been a story, by the way. I would lead with that when I met people.
Right.
Was that, I went hunting with Dick Cheney. I didn't end up, but there's a whole staff. And those people are responsible for, you know, not committing plagiarism.
Yeah.
So again,
what happened to the woman she paid like $1 million to? That one should have been someone she could rely on.
Look, $1 million isn't what it used to be.
I know. True. Like, clearly, I think it was more than $1 million.
Especially not in Washington.
No, not and Washington or out here.
Melania gets embroiled in another thing that's like, it's not like she's like, I'm just going to read this Obama pamphlet on bullying. You know, somebody like copied it down. And what did they think?
And
like,
why did they let her call it what they call it? Be best.
Yeah, be best.
I still don't understand.
Yeah, well, you just feel like that was one where they were just
that's
laughing.
Just like,
can you get her to
say
it? It was like a bet, you know? It was like, I bet you $1 million.
Oh, English is not
a
first language.
I mean, maybe she really
said,
no, I really want children to be best.
Yeah.
Be their best. Mm-hmm. Be best.
Or
and
be
they were
your
just
best.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, as someone who, you know, may have been on the wrong end of some bullying in my younger life, I don't know how much it helps. I appreciate people, you know, being more aware of it now, for sure. I mean, look, when I was a kid, you got home, you were at least safe from the bullying. I mean, nobody was going to kick you. But now the bullying comes into your house, you know, in the way of...
If you turn on the computer.
If you turn on the computer. Yeah. But, I mean, kids of a certain age, they're, you know, more connected than, you know, any of us are. So you don't really ever get a respite from it. And look... It's a good thing to address. It's something that wasn't ever really addressed. I don't know that it helps, but I think it seems like a topic that she's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But you run into problems when you have a staff who, you know, they don't help her.
Yeah,
they just...
I think it is good that she decided to change it from just bullying or cyberbullying to dealing with opioid crisis as well as suicide prevention. So I think that was a good move because, you know, the press was really focusing on the cyberbullying issue, which was ironic, given her husband. So it's good that she's kind of widening the sphere there.
And unfortunately, they go hand in hand because, you know, kids who are bullied and they sit together on, like, the buddy bench waiting for other bullied kids to be friends with them, they probably, you know, go off in the woods and get high. So, you know, they go hand in hand.
Yeah,
so if you address, you can address both problems.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Melania.
I legitimately feel that way. And, you know, I think that there are, you know, First Lady is not an easy job, you know, at least not, you know, the days of Lady Bird Johnson, it probably wasn't that. But, you know, really, Jackie O onward, it kind of changed what that person was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Lady Bird Johnson was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's something for you, but that's not how I do things.
You're right. Yeah. And with the media being a little bit more, you know, because before Jackie and you go back to Mammy Eisenhower and...
Yeah,
all it's just the media wasn't as pervasive, and it was before TV, and it's radio, so you didn't have to be like, oh my gosh, I have to look a certain way and talk a certain way.
No, we only had fireside chats back then.
Right.
You could hear.
And there's a way to do it, though. Regardless, you know, I mean, of what people thought of President Reagan, Nancy Reagan, and the Just Say No to Drugs campaign. I mean, She was on an episode of Different Strokes, for God's sake. Like,
was she?
You don't question my knowledge about 80s reruns.
About Different Strokes.
Yeah, well, that in particular. But, you know, if you want to know about Facts of Life, we'll talk about that too as well.
Facts of Life.
Yeah, but anyway.
Got me through many of unemployment days.
Right. And by the way, I think Nancy Reagan and Mr. T were in the same episode, but that's not the point I'm trying to make. Which I wish it was the point I was trying to make. I wish this was the Mr. T after show or the Different Strokes after show. But in any case, you know, you can get out there and be very... very well received. I mean, it was, look, Reagan was a very divisive president. I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say that. For the most part, people really liked Nancy Reagan, you know, and that's kind of what I think you can accomplish. I don't think Hillary was that kind of first lady where she was like, well, I'm going to do health care, you know, and he's like, I'm going to let my wife do health care. I'm going to let her. But, you know, I don't know. I think it was, I don't know what Melania should have done, but it's tough for her to be out there. I think, you know, also you follow Michelle Obama, who is fairly popular, more popular than her husband, maybe not with some kids when it came to be lunchtime in their school. But, you know, I don't know. I think that's what it comes down to is I feel bad for her. And I don't know what she could have done differently. I mean, other than not marry Donald Trump, I guess.
She's trying. She keeps her hand, you know, away as much as she can.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yes, we did.
You guys talk about that? Yeah. Oh, that was so tough to watch.
That was.
Well, yeah. That's the sort of thing she signed up for, is that you got to hold that hand sometimes.
Sometimes.
Anyway, there's plenty of other things going on. And we have a very robust chat. Shareable Texas is back. And I have to feel like he's only back because Brooke is back this week. Ooh. Shareable Texas, why don't you stick with us every week? I can't give Shareable Texas too hard a time.
He didn't know. I don't think he knew that I was going to be here.
I
did not tweet
and
it
then
out,
he leaves
actually.
She's not here.
And Brooke's not here. Man.
Not watching.
But that's all right. Anyway, we're glad that everybody's there in the chat. Although he does think that Brooke should... Brooke, I don't think you'll be old enough to run for president in 2020, so you'll have to wait till 2024.
Just because I'm so young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly
what I'm saying. You're my favorite person today.
See?
Now.
I mean, if people want you to run for president, you're not going to be able to run for president in 2020.
See this baby face?
Exactly. Although the Lady Goth says, who is Brooke? Oh, this Brooke. She also thought you were too young to run for president. So... I think that, you know, we could dwell on a lot of these things, but I wanted to talk briefly about John McCain, and he is really at the end of his life. I mean, it's very apparent from sort of, you know, he's making proclamations about his funeral. He said that he doesn't want President Trump to be at his funeral. I think he could also extend that list to include President Bush, whose, you know, team didn't really treat him well during the 2000 election, some of the ads that were put out. But I guess he feels very strongly that he doesn't want President Trump to be there. He wants Mike Pence to be there, which makes sense because, like, God, how long has he known Mike Pence? You know, right. I mean, the things that they probably both know, even with Pence only being allowed to go out of the house when mother says, still the things that they both know. There are definitely bodies that they know.
As long as Pence had a chaperone.
Yeah, as long as he had a chaperone.
Then,
And, you know, it's not like this is an official statement on Senator John McCain letterhead. But what do you think, Brooke, about putting it out there that you don't want the sitting president to be at your funeral?
I mean, it's pretty bad when you might not even be alive and you don't want someone to be there. I mean, what does that say about that restrained relationship? And however, he is fine with Obama being there, who's someone that he actually ran against.
Right, and that beat him very badly.
That beat him for the presidency. So that says a lot. And you know what? It's his funeral.
Right.
I think that we should honor that.
Of course.
And it is what it is. And it's also sad that we're thinking about his funeral.
I mean, that he's
McCain
got to talk about
man.
It. And I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, I think that he definitely gets cast a certain way because of that 2008 campaign. But it's always worth mentioning that not only was he, you know, an American hero serving his country, but when he was imprisoned, he was able to go home because they realized that, you know, who his father was. But he was just like, no, I mean, if you're not going to send everybody home. So he actually could have left. And he stayed. Who amongst us would not take a chance to go home?
Right, exactly.
From you know, a Vietnam prison.
Exactly. I mean, and I know I wouldn't. So, yeah. I mean, it's incredible. That
epitome of a hero.
I mean, I would have gone to Canada when I got my draft card. But, you know, that's besides the point. But in any case. Well, you know. In any case, that, you know, and I mean, he's been a senator for a long time, and you know, I've met him a couple times just on various TV shows and things. By all accounts, he has a great sense of humor. People seem to really like him.
Yeah,
he has a
good sense of humor. Yeah.
For some reason, he doesn't like Donald Trump. And
well, I wonder why.
Where does Orrin Hatch get off telling him that he needs to invite Trump to his funeral? Like, seriously. First of all, now you're not invited, Orrin
Hatch.
Right.
I was like, why is Orrin Hatch even feel the need to get involved?
Like, don't comment. I mean, somebody must have asked him and he had to respond in some way. But you know, a good way to respond to that is either one, no comment.
Right. Or two, it's his choice.
It's like, that's a question for Senator McCain.
That's his situation.
That's the easy way out of it.
Right. And that's, and like Burke was saying, it's his funeral. It's just like someone's marriage and wedding. It's like you get to invite who you want to invite. So there is no reason that he needs to. And why would he? Why would he want to invite him?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. There's no reason. But it does prove the estrangement and also just how kind of an outlier Trump is to even, you know, some Republicans. When you're talking about a president in your own party that you don't even want there, but yet you'll take the Democrat who beat you by landslide before you have the president of your own party. It shows just sort of what he thinks of his character and everything else. But yeah, the man should be able to do whatever he wants without any questions
asked. And there are plenty of Republicans who feel about Obama the way that, you know, people sometimes on this panel feel about Trump. You know, I mean, they, you know, he's not a very popular figure amongst conservatives.
What do you mean? We love Trump.
I mean, you know, I like that Doritos commercial they did with Daryl Hammond. I thought that was pretty funny. But anyway, I don't know. I think that it's really up to him. But I guess somebody who, if they got the invite, probably wouldn't go is Sarah Palin, who he now feels like he needs to say that he regrets picking her for his running mate in 2008, which is like, dude, just kind of, you know, just let it go. I mean, what do you got
to
talk about?
There's no reason to bring that up.
I think it's clearly bothered him for all this time.
Right, of course.
But if anybody remembers, it was only 10 years ago.
Yep.
Believe it or not, only 10 years ago, the summer of 2008.
Yeah.
That campaign was not going anywhere, the John McCain campaign. He was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, suspend my campaign and really work on, you know, getting the budget fixed. And I think President Obama should, too. And Obama's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So then he's like, okay, I'm getting back on my campaign then. You know, and Sarah Palin, that choice, like what it did in terms of, you know, a very very unenergized, you know, base, really. Mm-hmm. There was excitement.
Right.
And, you know, her speech at the convention was not something for liberals. Yeah. She wasn't talking to you.
Yeah.
And it got conservatives excited.
Right.
And that's why people turned out to vote for John McCain, was because of how much, you know, they became excited and they were able to realize, like, you know what, this is a good man. This is a guy who could be president. But they were excited because he chose Sarah Palin. He needed to choose Sarah Palin. I think if he didn't choose somebody that got excited, they might have been like, can we get anybody else on that ticket?
Well, you know? I think, you know, at the time, because even I thought when he announced her, I was like, this is a really unorthodox choice. And I saw the speech and I thought, here's a governor that's balancing a senator. She's a younger, kind of up and coming, what we were thinking at the time, compared to him being, you know, an older statesman even then. And you saw the difference. You're like, this is a really interesting choice. And it felt very different. Then, of course, once she went along, we're like, ooh.
Okay, yeah, and I think a lot of the feelings about her, you know, have really just kind of snowballed in the years since the campaign, you know. And, you know, I think as funny as it was, you know, a lot of it is definitely owed to Tina Fey's portrayal of her. I think there's things that
Tina more than I see Sarah. Yeah,
there are things that Tina Fey said in character that people think that Sarah Palin actually said, which is great. But I mean, from a comedy standpoint, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think one thing that was great from that was that back then, I think Hillary at the time was kind of thinking about running later and had mentioned that. And so I think they wanted to get ahead of the curve with having a woman on a ticket. And I know that there was a lot of encouragement from women, of course. And it was a win for women to see a woman there. Right. So that was one good thing.
And it was the first time a Republican woman had been on the, you know, because it was Geraldine Ferraro in 84. Yeah. And so this was the first time to have that. So it was a very unorthodox, interesting choice at the time. And I really did. I was like, oh, this could be a... I don't want to say game changer because that was a big thing. Game changer.
It was indeed called
game
changer.
But it felt like it at the time when I actually watched it the first time at the convention. I'm like, this is really different, and who knows if this is really going to make a difference. Well, I still didn't think he had a chance to win just because of the dynamics of what was going on with the economy and a Republican being very unpopular at the time. And 8 years, as we see, after 8 years of one party in power, they tend to want to. Americans want to change, so I didn't think it was going to win, but I thought it was definitely going to tighten it up. So, you know, at the time, it was an interesting choice.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I remember the day that was announced. As people know, I produced a political talk show, a daily political talk show for Dennis Miller, and we were doing a show that day, and we were having on McCain surrogates. We were actually having on Jack Kemp, a past, and the news broke before that, so it ended up talking about like. Oh, yeah, this is, you know, and the feeling was that day, and then at least for a little while onward, is like, that kind of changes everything. Yeah. And I think it's a big deal. Now, I would ask a question to Hillary Clinton, though, who feels that people didn't vote for her because their husbands wouldn't let them. Women didn't vote for Hillary because her husbands didn't let them. Did those same husbands not let them vote for John McCain because Sarah Palin was on the ticket? I don't know the answer, but I know Hillary watches. So you can tweet at us and let us know what you think.
Of course.
Anyway, let us know what you think in the chat. We'll get caught up in the chat before we wrap things up. But ultimately what it comes down to is it's just sad that we're talking about the end of the end for John McCain. I don't know. He felt like he needed to take the shot on the way out.
Yeah.
Is there anything to be gained from that, Brooke, do you think? I mean...
You feel like it was a shot at Trump? That
Sarah Palin. Yeah.
Well, the shot at Sarah Palin. Okay.
I would say, you know, that it was probably I don't even know if it was a shot at her in a negative way. I think it's just sort of a closure thing when people come to the end of their life.
That's what
they're
I was going to say. Maybe he really wanted to get it off of his shoulders.
And he wanted to get it off his... Yeah. And he was just reflecting and thought, you know, if I could do it over again, maybe... Not really thinking about the fact that you're saying this publicly and now everyone knows it. It's just more like, you know, if I could do it again, maybe I would pick someone else besides Sarah Palin if I could do this again. You know, it's that type of thing. I think it was more of a kind of a reflection thing that just naturally you talk about. And then you're thinking, oh, crap, of course not.
Maybe
the
I should have said that.
Yeah. World knows. When it's a little different when you're a private citizen talking about your regrets and things.
I don't think that he like premeditatedly decided I want to put this out there to hurt Sarah Palin in any way.
I will mention a comment from the chat because Storage Drive Resident wants to let us know that he feels John McCain was a terrible candidate because he was and is for open borders and illegal aliens. As we know, Storage Drive Resident is... He kind of doesn't care about anything except the wall. And that's not, I'm not saying you don't care about anything.
Is he in Texas?
No, he's in like Sacramento, I believe. Somewhere up north here in California. But we appreciate you being there. And we always like... No, I'm being there in the chat.
Oh, okay. I thought you appreciate his being in San Francisco.
Anybody that's been around from like our first like Trump versus Hillary and stayed with us,
that's impressive.
I have a huge appreciation for the people that have been with us from the beginning.
Yes.
Let's talk about Iran.
Mm-hmm. Before we do that, can I mention some breaking news? Because we were talking about
breaking. Please, I want people to get their breaking news. This is what we were talking about.
I was thinking of the AT&T thing.
We still don't understand that. Yes.
So this is breaking. There's a firm that was tied to a Russian oligarch that made payments, more than $1 million, to the Essential Consultants LLC, which he used to pay Stormy Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So there's a Russian who paid.
So a Russian paid in the money to Essential Consultants, and that's the company that he funneled the money from to Stormy Daniels. So now we might have even more of a problem. And if you were wondering where the Russian connection was, this might be it.
Yeah, this one might be one of many.
And this Russian oligarch funneled in at least $4.4 million through EC, Essential Consultants. Mm-hmm. And that was what was on Stormy Daniels' check. Yeah. But I don't know. Trump paid it back, paid that money back through his little retainer agreement.
This sounds like fake news to me. I want to know what Rudy Giuliani has to say Let's get Rudy on the phone.
If he were to get on the phone right now, he would be of course, we knew that. We talked to this Russian all the time. I mean, it's not a crime.
It was for a real estate deal when they were going to try to build their hotel in Moscow.
That was the slush fund.
The Trump Taj Mahal Moscow, which, well.
So there's that. That's going to be interesting. And then that'll be everywhere.
Which we'll have to find out more, was the AT&T payments gave Michael Cohen like $200,000 for something, learning about the Trump administration and what was going on with that money.
AT&T did?
Mm-hmm. And so that was another breaking thing that I was just hearing about, too.
Yeah, we were trying to get to the bottom of that story before we started.
What exactly that was for.
Yeah, that's confusing. They gave Michael Cohen money to learn about.
I guess to get the scoop on Trump, and I don't know how those payments are going to work, but we'll have to find out more about
these
that
allegations
too.
Brought to you by Sprint, just putting that out there. Really,
now Verizon. Oh, T-Mobile. Yeah, T-Mobile.
Sprint, yeah.
Earlier today, President Trump said that he was pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. This should not come as a surprise. No. Anybody who's surprised is just like, okay, they clearly weren't paying attention. And then the way that this is worded in the fake news New York Times is unraveling the signature foreign policy achievement of his predecessor, Barack Obama, and isolating the United States among its Western allies. Where did that come from? But according to Mr. Trump, or the quote from Mr. Trump is, this was a horrible one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made. It didn't bring calm, it didn't bring peace, and it never will. This is always one of those things where you're like, all right, so the Trump administration is like, no, we're going to go our own way. Okay, but what are you going to do instead? Mm-hmm. So are you okay with the nuclear Iran? If you don't like this deal, would you like to sit down and make a different deal with them? I don't know. Sort of big picture, you hear this, Brooke. What's your takeaway when you heard the news? Not surprising, mm-hmm. but where do you think that you can go from here at this point?
Okay, so when I considered why it was that he wanted to pull out of the deal, he's essentially saying the deal that we have is going to allow them in 15 years to continue to, technically, it's to re-up on their fuel, and it's not supposed to be for nuclear means, but he's saying it will be, and we're basically paying them by not sanctioning them to continue to make nuclear arms, and he's upset about this sunset clause. Mm-hmm. Do you guys know the sunset provision?
Well, you know, of course I know what it is, but our audience might not. So for the sake of our audience, why don't you tell them what the sunset provision is?
Okay, so, and I want to make sure that I don't get this wrong. It is... he's saying that he's insisting that it puts off the day when Iran would become a nuclear armed state, and it's failed to address the growing missile capability that's occurring. So I guess the sunset clause is the time when they get the 12 months.
I was basically going to be like, it's like the tax cuts. It's like they eventually expire, and it's sort of like this deal eventually kind of winds down, and then they'll have to deal with the fact that they could start using nuclear fission to be able to build a nuclear bomb, technically.
Right.
But what I would basically say is the reason why he doesn't like it is because it was an Obama deal.
Yeah.
That's really all you have to know. If it was anything else, it was because it was dealt with Barack Obama. But we know that he has no clue, because he doesn't even clearly state anything about reasons why he doesn't really like the deal, except it's not a good deal. It's the worst deal. It's defective at its core.
Right,
it's one-sided, it's terrible. But you never get anything deeper from him because he has no clue what was even in the deal.
If he would just say, we believe that Iran, because it runs out, is going to continue to become armed nuclearly, and we're not helping the situation, and that's why it's not a good deal, then we would understand. But again, it was
a deal that was done with multiple countries that have vested interest in the region. It wasn't just us with like he keeps saying one-sided deal. It wasn't one-sided because it involved a lot of different countries, and it was a compromise.
Right.
And it was working, and it was something that was preventing them from developing a bomb. But now when you get out of that deal, one, you're making it look worse for every other country in the world, because again, like we talked about last week, what country is going to say we're going to work on a deal with the United States because they're going to back out whenever they want? So it doesn't make us look any stronger, and it allows Iran and destabilizing the Middle East. It makes it worse, not better, for that surrounding area for our allies that are in closer proximity to Iran. So it's, again, another stupid decision, but it was only prefaced because of it was a deal done by President Obama and
if he could even point to like the financial implications and how it's a bad financial deal for us, how we should be sanctioning Iran and how they're making more money and we're not getting anything out of it because eventually they'll have these arms, maybe we would understand, and maybe he could talk to our allies and convince them the same, because there are financial implications for our allies as well.
But and they seem to not want to get out of the deal, obviously, and they've been trying with Macron that was here, and Angela Merkel were here last couple weeks. They were trying to convince them to stay in it, and it was really in the best interest, just like the Paris Agreement, to stay in the deal. But then when our country goes alone, again, it takes us out of that leadership position that we always talk about, which, again, is the antithesis of what Trump always says, making America great and putting America first. You're putting America not first. When you're now the only one going your own, yes, because now you go your own way, and it weakens us in the world's eyes now of who we are as a leader.
Yeah, we're isolating ourselves.
We are, and it's dangerous. But hopefully, you know, we will have to start fixing these wrongs.
Yeah.
Once he's out of office and Pence is a lame duck, and we get
well, you know, he has other big decisions to make soon with North Korea, and I wonder what the implications are for that. What do you think, Christian?
Well, it's a great question, because I think when it comes to North Korea, obviously the nuclear option, or the nuclear capability, I guess, is the real concern. But he's perfectly, I don't know, he's handling that situation so much better than I thought that he ever would, and not that he's handling it well. But the fact that they're actually, you know, on the verge of sitting down is crazy. But I think that it goes back to what you were saying about all the Obama, you know, Obama had no relationship with North Korea. And he's like, oh, I can do this. Great. So there isn't anything to undo. He gets to actually kind of be the trailblazer. And we've talked about, you know, possible Nobel Peace Prize for Trump. if they, you know, shut down all nuclear ambitions and North Korea and South Korea get back together like one big happy Korea, I mean, look. Korea is going to be better off than North and South Carolina, North and South Dakota, you know? Those are the real pieces that need to be brokered, and I don't think that they'll ever get through them. But that's sort of a roundabout answer. I think that the only reason that the North Korea thing is this close to happening is because they showed a willingness to, you know, not, you know, whatever. They didn't really stop their nuclear program. They just, like, kind of pressed pause on it. You know, they're like, all right, we're not going to tear anything down, but all right, we're going to not actively do this right now. Let's see what we can work out. And I don't think people expect Donald Trump to make peace with Iran. But if they're saying, like, you know, if we can talk one-on-one, like, let's talk as men. You know, let's sit down. If you're going to talk to Kim Jong-un, why can't you talk to us? That's a great question. Yeah. But I feel like he's going to be able to I feel like there will be an approach to Iran at some point. But what I don't think, and this is a question I wanted to ask you guys, is the U.S. pulls out of this deal and immediately, you know, like Twitter might overreact to things once in a while. People are like, oh, great. So now World War III is happening. I'm like, I don't think that either.
No.
I don't think we're at that point. I mean, there's still a lot of people who are with that same deal. You know, they're not the United States.
I think it's a soft pull out on our part. So I don't think we're imposing sanctions right away from what I know.
But
soft pull.
You knew why I was just like, I'm like, do I really?
I know. I was trying to like.
Do I really want to make that Stormy Daniels joke?
I knew it.
Sometimes a soft pullout costs you $130,000. I decided to yes, I did want to make the joke. Because then if I didn't, but despite that, I do think that it's one of those where it's, you know, like, well, what's in this for us? We're going to sit this out. You know, he's handling a lot of these things like they would handle the tasks on Celebrity Apprentice, you know? It's like he can broker those kind of pieces, I guess.
Well, it's very, like, black and white for him. He can't really see any nuance here. And again, if he had no involvement with it, he wants to basically tear it up. Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, and I'll let you get your thought out in a second, Brooke. I think a lot of that is the people that he has surrounding him are all, you know, like the people who are actually conservative in the White House, and I'm not talking about President Trump, but the people who are actually conservative, I mentioned how much they don't like President Obama, and they're just like, yeah, we kind of want to undo everything. Mm-hmm. So let's try and get some credit for some stuff that we did. What were you going to say?
Yeah, well, with Pompeo and Bolton now by him side instead of H.R. McMaster, for example, and Rex Tillerson, I mean, we knew that this was bound to happen.
Right.
But what beguiles me is that Iran hasn't really fumbled the ball at all with this agreement. They've really been good. And are you thinking of something?
No.
These metaphors.
I was thinking back to the soft pullout.
They've really done what what they said they were going to do. Yeah. When you think about North Korea, though, I mean, this guy has lied over and over and tried to deceive us in so many ways. So
are you talking about Kim Jong-un or President Trump? It's always, it's always important.
It could be, yes, it could be either one there.
Yeah. So when they give us one inkling of maybe they're going to stop with their nuclear proliferation, I don't believe them.
I don't either, especially just from their history and to see where we were even with his father, Kim Jong-un's father, in 2000. And we've had the mid-90s, and we've seen a lot of these times where we've had a couple steps forward and then we go back again. It's such a tenuous thing that I really don't think that Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo, who has virtually no experience in this world, to be able to broker a deal that people had worked on since the truce, the ceasefire in 1953. I mean, it's 65 years worth of history and 11 presidents, lots of secretaries of state, lots of people with a full actual staff that are working there in the State Department. We don't have a lot of ambassadorships filled, so you have a lot of talent that's not there right now either. So to think that somehow we're going to get a lasting deal seems very unlikely. However, it's really going to come down to South and North Korea themselves, because they're the ones that are going to have to work together. And President Moon, South Korea, they're going to have to be the ones that are going to have to work. And those surrounding allies there, they're going to have big influences like China and Japan as well.
To that point, Lady Goth in the chat says, South Korea is just stroking his ego. China and Japan have also been very good at that so far. Mm-hmm. Again, I think she's talking about Kim Jong-un. Or
Trump's ego. It seems like a quote. You could say, which one are they talking about? And it could be a whole game. Trump, Kim Jong-un.
Are they different?
Could be a whole game. They different people? Right. It's a whole game there. We could make a lot of money off of that. We could just make a card game there. A drinking game.
Now you're talking about the Trump administration drinking game.
But Trump doesn't drink, so.
Right.
Well, he doesn't drink alcohol. He drinks like bowls of KFC gravy, just to wash down the mashed taters.
Right.
Yeah, I just drink like six Diet Cokes.
Yeah, he drinks a lot of Diet Cokes.
I have one and I have a headache. Anyway.
I know.
Anyway.
I guess that's the diet we should all be on, because apparently he's the healthiest person around, so
It made him grow 3 inches.
Again, it's also propaganda, too.
As
it's like
dictated that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is this from North Korea? Is this from...
But we know Ronnie does drink. Yeah. So, with that was happening.
We only have a couple of minutes here. And now here's a moment where I wish that Chelsea was here, because I want to know what she thinks about the fact that Michelle Obama has said she's not going to run for office. It never really seemed like she was somebody that was interested in that. I think it's more people's wishful thinking. I know Chelsea thinks Oprah's going to be our next president.
she really?
Oh, yeah. She wants her to. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I mean, she feels like she would win if she ran, but I think she understands that Oprah is not going to run, but she's still holding it up. Mm-hmm. But I think Michelle Obama is someone who is at least a little closer to considering it. I don't think Oprah ever was going to be it, but I'm not surprised. It seems like her level of public spotlight was enough for her. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like Hillary, who always sort of had these kind of ambitions. It's not like she's like, okay, now this is my turn. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't want to have any kind of elected office. So this doesn't surprise me. But I don't know, Scott, were you surprised at all? You're disappointed at all? Because just like, of course she's not.
She's never said she was going to. So it's not like she changed her mind or something. We knew that she wasn't going to. And the fact of the matter is, you're absolutely right. I mean, she was in the White House for 8 years. She saw the way that her and her husband were treated on a regular basis. Why would she want to subject herself to that again? Even if she could run out and win, why would she want to do that again? And, she's got a perfectly great retirement now, like 54 years old, and book deals and everything else. She doesn't have to work a day again in her life, right?
Like,
why would you want to run and deal with all that now if you don't have to?
President Trump ran on Make America Great Again, but you know who America's been great again for? The Obama family. Once they were out of that White House, it's just like, it's all smiles.
Exactly, because you don't have the daily pressure. So of course not. Why would she? She doesn't need to.
So Brooke, you don't think that was something that was ever really going to happen?
No, and I wouldn't be supportive of it either. Mm-hmm. I think they had their time in the White House.
Right.
And
you don't
and
have...
were amazing. And she is an extremely educated and a woman who is so eloquent and could be a great leader. But I just don't see it.
Yeah, we don't need the husband and wife. That. thing either in we've had enough of that with the Bushes
and when Hillary ran, people said, "Oh, it'll be like having Bill in the White House."
It's just, you kind of need
to. Yeah, like that was going to be a good thing.
That's not what this country is. And we see that in a lot of other countries where wives take over for husbands. And it happens a lot for governorships, too. We had that in the past a lot where a governor would leave.
I think the Obamas are happy where they are.
Totally.
So what you're saying is that Jeb's not going to be president? Is that remember, he ran as Jeb exclamation point. That
did he really?
Yeah.
Well,
2016 for that 20, brief amount of time.
When he was in the race,
when he used to run in Florida, too, he had that.
It was Jeb. Anyway,
Jeb with a question mark would be like, maybe.
Well, that's how people felt about it. It was Jeb?
Maybe?
Yeah.
That's what it should have been.
Yeah. What about George P. Bush? Yeah. You know, they didn't. I don't think Jeb was the one that they wanted. Anyway, we talked about half of the things that I wanted to this week.
We'll spend another hour just to deal with the other half.
Yeah. Well, we don't have affiliates to alert that we're going to go long. We're not Nightline, apparently. But anyway, we'll be back next Tuesday at 4. And I believe, Brooke, you'll be with us again. Final comment from the chat. Shareable Texas says, "I don't trust someone who doesn't like beer."
Who doesn't like beer? Trump.
Yeah. No, he doesn't like anything. Anyway, so as I said, we'll be back next Tuesday. Until then, make sure you follow the show at Trump Report ABTV. And you can follow me at ChristianDMZ on Twitter and Instagram. Brooke, where do people follow you?
You can follow me at Brooke Solis, SOLIZ TV, on Twitter and Instagram.
And Scott.
And you can find me on the Twitter at SMAN80.
Have you been getting in any fights with McConnell? Or
a couple retweets with that, but I you know.
It's almost summer. You got to take some time off.
I got to take a little break, but can't help myself when they say something stupid.
Thanks to everybody in the chat, and special thanks to Shareable Texas for writing a song, not just for this show, but for my personal podcast, The Blackcast, which you can find at blackcast.com. Why not? Anyway, we'll see everybody next Tuesday. Thanks so much.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.